John McCarty, got something for you. Take care of that.
I'm already have.
I need at least one person that's a step ahead of me. Wouldn't hurt to have three or four. This morning we're in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verse 13. You're looking at one verse, four words. The sixth commandment says, "Thou shalt not kill," or your version may say, "You shall not murder." All right? As we go through the Ten Commandments, when we finish them, of course, we're going to keep going through chapter 21 through the end of the book of Exodus. But very quickly, we're going to be coming into instances of case law. And case law is a specific situation where, in this case, here's how you apply one of the Ten Commandments, perhaps. Right? So there are going to be some very specific things that God's going to give them laws about that, for the most part, I think we may find that they make application to the Ten Commandments. And as I was studying for the sermon this morning, there are so many times where I can go to chapters and verses after this in the book of Exodus to illustrate my point about thou shalt not kill. And I don't want to do that a whole lot because we're going to get to that, you know, in a few weeks. I don't want to be preaching a sermon down there, you know, and we're here. So I'm going to try to avoid that to some extent. But remember that when we get there, that here's what we're talking about, application of that. Another thing that I noticed this week, and this is because we talked about this a little bit Tuesday night in our Bible study, like Mike was bringing up the idea that sometimes we tend to look at God and God's actions in the Old Testament as being different than what we see Jesus in the New Testament. And it seems like, and a lot of people have this idea, that it seems like Jesus is more gracious in the New Testament, and God is more angry. But here's something I noticed this week, and then that's a common thing, and you could obviously see where you get that. But something I noticed just in studying this week, and I want you to pay attention to this as we go forward as well. So many times when God gives them these case laws, God is giving the law not to give you something difficult to do, but he's giving it to protect someone from you. He's giving it because he is giving grace and being gracious to the poor, to the weak, to the widows, for those who are downtrodden. And these laws are there to protect them from people like me and you. And that's grace. That's grace. You'll see God aggressively having that spirit throughout all of the Bible. And that very spirit is we're going to be talking about to a large degree this morning in this sermon. So, the sixth commandment. You've got 2 points on the front, four more on the back. I've got a lot of blanks this morning. If I have a tendency to run past blanks and not fill them in. So if I miss something, you don't know what it is, just wave your hand and ask me and we'll back up and do it. Here's the first point. What do we mean when we say you shall not kill or you shall not murder? What exactly is that talking about? The sixth commandment, when speaking of killing or murdering, means, parentheses, with premeditation, to intentionally and unjustly take the life of another person. Now, the three words in the blanks are key words. This sixth commandment, when speaking of killing or murdering, means with premeditation. In other words, I've thought it through. I've planned it out. I've got my ducks all in a row to carry this out with premeditation, to intentionally. That word speaks to us of, it's not by accident. It's on purpose. I'm doing this intentionally with intent in my heart. So it's with premeditation, intentionally, and unjustly taking the life of another person. That word has implications, doesn't it? It implies that perhaps there can be the taking of a life that may be just. Now, just because it's implied doesn't mean that there ever is such a case. But it does seem to imply that. So whatever this you shall not kill, you shall not murder is, it is an unjust act. It is intentional act. And it is a premeditated act of taking the life of another person. It does not refer, this commandment does not refer to accidental killings. The reason we know that is because God deals with those instances later on in the book of Exodus and the first five books of the Old Testament. It can refer to death caused by extreme negligence. Someone is extremely careless and causes the death of another person. They can be guilty under the sanctions of capital punishment with the sixth commandment. Now, as we go through this as well, you're probably going to occasionally just think about how our laws are, and you'll see a lot of similarities. You may see a lot of some differences as well. But we take into account whether or not someone is accidentally killed, right? We take into account how gross the negligence may be in a trial. So these things come to bear. And we'll talk about some of these later on in the book as well. So there's what the word means. That's what the commandment means. You are not, God says, to with premeditation and with full intent unjustly take the life of another person. So there's the definition. Let's go to number two. The sixth commandment is not talking about animals. Now, you may think that's silly. Why would I even bring that up? It's because things like that. This comes to bear. I have heard people say, well, what if it says, thou shalt not kill? Killing a dog is killing. Killing a red wasp is killing something. So, how can that be okay and this not? Or, you know, whatever the case may be, someone wanting to find fault or to debate something. But there are times in our culture and in becoming increasingly more so when this thing, this idea of the killing of animals is at the forefront of people's mind, and they have a worldview that is perverted. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about this. This question is a lot more common than you may think. You probably weren't expecting to see this point on an outline on this commandment, but it is. I don't have a problem with the question. You know, I wouldn't belittle somebody for asking the question, because it's good to get all your ducks in a row, get all your questions answered, you know, if you're going to study something. So it's not an issue there. So how do we know that this is not talking about animals? You should not kill animals. It's because God condones the killing of animals to eat. We see elsewhere in the scripture, God says it's okay for you to kill an animal for your food. So we know it's not talking about animals. God also instructs some animals to be killed in a capital crime. We'll see that later in the book of Exodus as well. where if I have an ox who is mean, or someone has a, in our day you might think of a pit bulldog or something, who is mean, and they kill another person, or your ox gores someone else or whatever, God tells them how to handle that. And it's a capital crime. So we'll talk about that a little bit later as well, but it gives us at least two exceptions that this commandment, sixth commandment, is not talking about animals. 30 years ago, I preached a sermon somewhere and used this quote from PETA. Is that how you say that? PETA, P-E-T-A? Here's the quote. A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. Now this sounds like, to me, one of those achievement test questions I used to have at school where they said, pick out the one that doesn't belong. Yeah. Right? And yet, PETA is serious. And there are millions like them. There is no significant difference in their minds between a rat and a pig and a dog and Morgan Grubbs. Viewing. When we view as equal, the life, the inherent life value of an animal equal to that of a man, we degrade the value of the man. It can be no other way. What if God had told us, God has told us in the Bible, Old and New Testament, that you can eat any animal, it's there for you to eat. You could eat any animal. What if he had said, and you can eat mankind. Nothing wrong with cannibalism. What would that do to the value, the life value of man? It comes down. It brings it down on the same plane as an animal. Yet that's not what God has set up. God has said, here are the animals. You can eat the animals, you are not to kill the man. There is a huge, as our president would say, a huge chasm between the life value of an animal and a man. Now, I'm sitting here thinking right now of evil men. I'm sitting here thinking of my dog. And the life value between my dog and some of the most evil, perverted people I can think of is more like that in my mind. And perhaps I'm just in thinking so. But as a general rule, even that person is a human being. Even that person is made in the image of God. And my dog is not. Now here's what we do. We commonly raise the value of select animals. Not because they have greater inherent value, but we artificially assign greater value to them of our own making. We call them pets, right? And yet, there are other people who place that value inerrantly. I've had people argue with me, or want to argue, or I don't like snakes. I'll just tell you up front. I'll find out what kind they are after they're dead. Okay? I don't like them. I'm scared of them. I'm not too scared of one that's that long, as long as I can keep him in sight. In the past, I've had friends that had snakes for pets. I didn't go to their house much. But I was there working one day, and this 8 or 10 year old boy had this snake out, letting it waller all over him, you know. And I could tell he was kind of wanting to get close to me with it. And I just told him, and his daddy was standing there, and I just told his daddy, I said, listen, I'm afraid of snakes. If you come very close to me, that snake, I might hit that kid. I mean, I never would hit that kid. That's not, I would never do that. But fear, you'll do some things out of fear. And if that snake gets on me, I'm swinging. I'm moving. I'm doing something. And if he gets hurt, I didn't mean it. Okay, that's just where I'm at. Okay. But sometimes, I like my dog. I like her. And sometimes, we can hold faithful Fido closely to our breast in one hand and eat a big juicy hamburger with the other. Right? Faithful Fido is a wonderful human being. Never mind that this steer had to sacrifice its life for me to eat it. Right? Both are animals. We feel the tension between that. I wouldn't doubt but what some of you are feeling a little bit of tension by me talking a little bit about faithful Fido. Let me show you how this tension was felt in an illustration in our family. Probably 7 years ago or so. I'm glad Susan's not in here because she would straighten me out on every little detail that I'm going to get wrong. But about 7 years ago or so, she was with Mark's wife at Walmart, the grocery store. I think it was Kroger's, but I'm not sure about that. They were there getting some groceries, wherever they were getting at whatever store it was. And I think they were in Mark's vehicle. It's a Tahoe, I believe. The back end raised up, you know, like a suburban Tahoes do. They got groceries where it was, and they had all the kids. It's about six kids there with them. And they were putting stuff in. Well, unbeknown to them, a mouse had built a nest, apparently fairly recently, somewhere where when you open that back end up, the nest, mice, and little pink baby mice, you know, all fall out everywhere. Susan don't like mice. She don't do mice. If they're in the parking lot, people coming and going, so it ain't very long they're attracting attention. And Susan's yelling, screaming, get them out, don't let them in the vehicle, kill them, get them rid of them, kill them, kill them, you know, all this kind of stuff. And our oldest granddaughter, Katie, being the ethnic cleanser of the family, proceeds very hastily to dispose of the mice. Babies and all. I won't tell you exactly how or the details, but she's getting rid of them quick. Jacob, our youngest grandson, has a tender heart. He's like 4 or 5 years old at the time. I know what he's thinking. I wasn't there, but I know what he's thinking. He's thinking, catch these things and make have a pet. Raise these baby mice, have a pet. Well, by the time he has that thought, they're history. Katie's finished them off. He gets irate. He starts yelling right here in the parking lot. You can imagine people looking and coming and going. He said, you murderer! You murderer! You a murderer! Katie, you're a murderer! You see the tension? See the tension? There are lots of people whose worldview is that this lizard or this frog or this red wasp or this cow or this horse or this dog or cat or whatever you want to name, their life is as valuable as mine. I hope not. I hope not. So what's the issue? Why is this being talked about in thou shalt not kill? Here's the reason. It's because the devaluing of life results in a perverted interpretation of the sixth commandment. The devaluing of life results in the perversion of an interpretation of the sixth commandment. You can see that by the governor of Virginia, who is trying to say it's okay, not just abortion, but to decide whether or not you're going to keep a child after the child is born alive. And on the other extreme, you can see me, if I kill a stray dog, I'm afraid to tell anybody. Because I may end up in jail. That's why it's significant. Thou shalt not kill is saying nothing about animals. Nothing. That's not the subject. Number three on the back page. The sixth commandment is not talking about capital punishment or war. In Genesis chapter 9, verses 5 and 6, after the flood, God tells Noah, he tells mankind, and this is repeated more than one place in the Bible, that if you shed man's blood, your blood will be shed. That the punishment for crimes are to be proportionate. You read phrases like an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a foot for a foot, or hand for a hand, or whatever the case would be. That doesn't mean if I purposely chop your hand off, I got to get my hand purposely chopping off. It's not that kind of eye for eye, hand for hand. It's the idea of proportion. Proportionate. And when somebody kills someone, murders someone intentionally, and life for a life is the punishment. It's the proportion set forth. The next thing, and this was something that I had not caught before the last couple of weeks. Capital punishment is the only acceptable punishment for murder in the Scripture. No lesser sentence was accepted by God. I'm not going to read the verses. They're right there in Numbers chapter 35. You can read them. God said, you will not take a bargain. You will not take something less. It's life for life. The next point, because this is one that's argued a lot in our day against capital punishment, the idea is that capital punishment cheapens human life. It does not. It's just the opposite. A failure to enforce capital punishment is what makes cheap, live cheap. And then the last one. Sometimes God may directly carry out this punishment. We may see instances of that in the Scriptures. There may be instances of that in the world today that we may never know about. But sometimes God may carry out that punishment himself. But most often, he delegates it to us. And there is a reason for that as well. That we may learn to fear. We may learn to fear God. That we may learn to value life. Number four. The sixth commandment does, among other things, forbids abortion. This verse I'm going to read, it's in Exodus 21. We're going to get there in a month or so, or 2 months or so. But I'm going to read this one. Exodus 21, verses 22 and 23. If you've got a Bible to follow along, do so. If not, listen carefully. If men fight, this is the text. If men fight and hurt a woman with child. Woman with child doesn't mean the child's born. Woman with child means a pregnant woman, right? If men are fighting, and in the process of them fighting, they hurt a woman with child, so that she gives birth prematurely. Yet no harm follows. Everything's okay. He shall surely be punished accordingly as the woman's husband imposes on him. So there is some kind of punishment, some kind of retribution. And he shall pay as the judge determines. Now listen to this verse. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life. If these two men who are fighting harm this pregnant woman in such a way that either she dies or the baby in her womb dies, that's a capital offense. Amen. Now, here is the key. If they kill this, I suppose they kill the baby, unborn baby. I'm assuming from the context, they didn't set out to kill this woman's baby. This was not a premeditated murder. It was not intentional. And yet, it's a capital crime. If the killing of an unborn child in this kind of instance of gross negligence is a capital crime, how much more would it be a capital crime if the unborn child is killed intentionally? Is that right? Number five. And here's where it gets hard. The sixth commandment includes far more than the physical act of taking a life. I'm going to read this in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, we call the Sermon on the Mount. Starts chapter 5 with the Beatitudes and goes on through. In chapter 5, Jesus makes six similar statements. And we've already looked at one of them in our series on the Ten Commandments. Six times in the last half of chapter 5, Jesus begins a sentence with like this. You have heard it said by them of old time. Something. Then he says, but I say unto you something. Okay, I just want to point out the six, and we're going to hone in on ours. The first one is found in verse 21, Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. You've heard this said of them old time, you shall not murder. So there's ours. But I say unto you such and such. Stephen. Unintentional homicide. Okay, I'm sorry. This life for life principle seems to be for unintentional homicide. Is that a contradiction in terms? I'm not sure if you can unintentionally have a homicide or not. But am I missing the other blanks? Okay. Matthew chapter 5. The first of the six, you've heard said of them of old time, you shall not murder. The second one is in verse 27. You've heard it said of them of old time, you shall not commit adultery. But I say unto you, there's the seventh commandment. I suspect we may hear more about this verse next week as John gets on the seventh commandment. Verse 31, furthermore it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorcement. That's not one of the Ten Commandments. But Jesus says, you've heard this. Here's what you practice. But I say to you something else. Verse 33 is the fourth one. It says, again, you've heard it said to them of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you such and such. We talked about that one. And the third commandment, taking God's name in vain. Verse 38 is the fifth one. You have heard it said with them of old time, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you such and such. And then the sixth one, verse 43, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you such and such. Those six things, three of them, are in the Ten Commandments. We're looking at one of those, in verse 21. Notice what he says. You have heard it said by them of old, you shall not murder, and whosoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. That's true. They heard that. That's in the Ten Commandments. There's a sanction to it. That's a true statement. But they, the Jews, and we would too if we had been there, tend to think that's all it is. If there's any one of the Ten Commandments that I can keep, it'll probably be this one. But Jesus says, verse 22, but I say to you, that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause. Boy, I like that phrase, without a cause. I've been angry with my sisters a lot, but I always had a good reason. Whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. What judgment? The judgment on murder. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, you empty-headed person, criticizing them, lashing out with verbal statements. Whoever says that shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. That's a little different than thou shalt not kill, isn't it? It is. Here in these verses where Jesus elaborates on the sixth commandment, we see hatred. We see, could be mockery. We see verbal abuse. We see a desire to tear someone down. We see a desire perhaps to physically kill someone. We see a desire to hurt, to harm another person. The act of killing, the act of physically taking someone's life does not have to actually take place for you or me to be guilty of murder. Now, had we actually killed somebody, that would be a far more worse sin. But we are still guilty in spirit of murder if we are not able to carry out the act in God's sight. What does this look like in real life? There are degrees. Some acts of abuse are not so terribly bad. Others are life-changing. Last week, Susan was watching an episode of Old Western, The Virginian. Y'all remember The Virginian? And in this episode, I probably would have never noticed this if I hadn't had this kind of stuff on my mind. In this episode, there are three siblings, an older sister, a brother, and a younger sister. The younger sister marries this guy, and he's abusive. He beats her, drinks a lot, and he's just horribly mean to this girl. And the Virginian, what's his name on the show? Anybody know? A Virginian? Is that all he's called, a Virginian? I think he's called something else. But anyway, he figures out that, and what happened was, the guy got killed. That was beating his wife, he got killed. And somehow this other guy that's the Virginian's friend gets accused for it. He's in jail fixing to hang. But the Virginian knows he didn't do it, and somehow he gets it all figured out, and this older sister confesses. what she said is what struck me. You learn something from TV shows occasionally, you know. She said, I've already killed him 100 times in my head. What's one more? Well, that 101st one was more. But still, in her heart, she had been guilty of murder. We mock someone's appearance. You can go to a public school playground and see this commandment broken every day, multiple times. At least you could when I was in school. Mocking another person. Fighting with your family or your spouse, and you blurt out words, I hate you. Maybe you would say the next day you didn't mean it, but we say things, we do things that are by degrees some lesser harmful, some more. Yet we're guilty, Jesus says, of the breaking the spirit of this commandment. Shall not murder. One more thing. Number six, to obey the sixth commandment requires positive acts of restoration of injured persons. Let me say that again. I'll explain it. To obey the sixth commandment requires positive acts of restoration of injured persons. In all of these commandments, I believe you could say this would be true. For instance, last week, honor your father and mother. That's a positive command. Do something. We could reword that command, do not dishonor your father and mother. And I might just sit on a bench and never say a word and think I'm not guilty of dishonoring my parents. But the command has a positive side to it. Honor them. Actively honor your father and mother. All of these commandments, I think, are that way. It's easy for me to say, thou shalt not kill. Check. But the positive side is that is to restore those people who have been beat down. Lift up the heavy-hearted. You and I live in a world, and you will always be doing this. Your life will be lived with you seeking to restore the effects of the fall of man into sin. You will struggle with that your entire life. And without someone struggling with it, civilization sinks into the mire and gets worse and worse and more evil and more perverted and more chaos. We fight to recover from the fall. You will have, I will have, enough of a fight on my hands to restore my own sinful nature. But I must do more. I must restore society in which I live. I must work at it. I must participate in trying to do that. If we fail to defend another person's life who is in threat of being killed are being beat down, if you and I fail to defend their life, we are complicit in the crime. Complicit, C-O-M-P-L-I-C-I-T, complicit. That means we're part of it. We're in on it. Have you ever felt shame for something bad that you've done? All of us have. Have you ever felt shame for something good you did not do? I'll tell you a couple of stories in my own life that fit that latter category. I was in the first grade. I got a cousin, first cousin. My age. We started first grade together down in Southeast Arkansas public school. I was, I don't know how you would just what word to use. I don't want to use the word smart, but I was smart enough to not make a fool of myself, you know, to kind of see where what was acceptable behavior on the playground and what wasn't, you know, not to be embarrassed. You know, I had enough sense of that. My cousin wasn't quite that way. He was obnoxious. And he was spoiled. And he was just obnoxious. And other boys on the playground just, you know, after a while you get around, you don't want to be around a kid like that. You don't really like him. And one day, another kid and him got to fight. Everybody gathered around. Big circle, and they're in the middle fighting. He's my cousin. And I'm sitting there watching. Everybody else is cheering on the guy that he's fighting. Why? Well, he had it coming. He had it coming. Everybody knew he had it coming. I knew he had it coming. They're sitting there cheering him on, and I'm at the kind of behind the circle a little bit. Never say a word. I don't cheer him on. But I don't defend him either. Maybe it wasn't my place to defend him. Just because he's my cousin, that doesn't mean I've got to defend every cousin I've got. I hope not. But I still remember the feeling of shame at doing nothing. Tell you another one. This time I'm in the fifth grade. Ride the school bus from Hallie to Dermott to school. About a 15 mile trip. You know how school buses are. You know, the time you get back to, you're picking up kids on the way back to school, and there's 20 or 30 kids on this bus probably. This was been in about 68, 69. And Dermott schools were just starting to get integrated. And on our bus, there was two black girls who were teenagers, 13, 14, 15, I don't know how they were. They were on the bus. Everybody else was white kids. We drove down the road in the school bus. Everybody's yakking and talking and carrying on. And I'm not going to exaggerate. Don't exaggerate, I don't think, but I preach anyway, unless it's obvious, but this is exactly how it happened. You drive down the road and all the kids are yipping and roaring and talking and screaming and, you know, carrying on the bus. We got close to this first black girl's house when the bus driver let off the gas and started to slow down to stop to pick her up. Within 2 seconds, it got deathly quiet on that school bus. You could hear a pin drop. Why? Have we ever seen a black girl before? Yeah. Bus driver opened the door, she would get on. Nobody wanted this black girl to sit by. I guarantee she hoped there was an empty seat somewhere. If it was, she'd sit there. Another quarter mile, we picked up the second black girl. The second black girl had a huge advantage over the first one. She had a seat waiting on her by the first girl. If she got on the first girl, got on the bus, there was not any seats. You know, you see those seats right there. It's just like a school bus almost. You know, maybe one person on this seat, two people on the next seat. You know, and you just kind of spread out. And as often as not, there was somebody in every seat. And you could see her get on the bus. It's deathly quiet. She starts walking down the aisle looking for a seat. If there's not one, she's got to sit down. She's sat down by somebody. They would bolt out of that seat and go sit somewhere else in 5 seconds. Occasionally, you'd hear snickers. Occasionally, you may even hear, you know, something being said. I never did anything to harm that girl. I never mocked her. I never said anything. Why do I feel shame? If I could do that again, I would tell her, you've got a seat right here every day. When we get to the next stop, I'll get up and go sit somewhere else so your friend can sit here with you. But every day, you'll have a place to sit. We pick her up. Bus would start again. Within 30 seconds, the conversation would start to come back to life. That happened every day for the 2 years. We moved up here right about that time. But for 2 years, I saw that happen every day. What on earth are people thinking? Have you never seen a black person before? And how many days do you have to do this before it gets old? The shame of not taking up for someone who is being misused and put down and abused is breaking the spirit of this commandment. I may not have actively done it in that case, but I still feel the guilt. It's not enough to keep this commandment. It's not enough just to refrain from killing somebody. It's not enough to keep this commandment, to say I've kept it, just to not physically and verbally abuse somebody. We have to be proactive and make positive moves to restore life for people who have experienced these things. Let's pray. Father, would you help us to see inside ourselves, see the ugliness that is there. God, we need your grace. We need your grace so much. God, to just act right. Would you glorify your name through our lives, through our sanctification? Amen.